Welcome to That's Not How a Baby Sleeps, the podcast where parenting meets hilarity. I'm your host, Alicia Daishon, and I've got the fantastic Eleni Katsinis as my co-conspirator in all things baby and toddler sleep. We're not your average sleep consultants, no cry it out nonsense or sleep training at all for that matter.
Okay, so today we are busting one of the biggest sleep myths out there, drowsy but awake. Okay, so Eleni, I'll let you go first. So has Nora ever gone down drowsy but awake?
I guess, yeah, when she was like a newborn, like before like the 3 month mark, I used to like, I followed the eat, play, sleep schedule, which was obviously silly, but I would put her down in her crib, you know, with her sleep sack, and I would still like kind of support her though. Like she'd lay there and she looked sleepy. She had her binky. I just like, you know, touched her and then she'd fall asleep. But that was also before the 4 month sleep regression came.
Totally.
So she was very easygoing in the beginning of like the newborn stages. And then no, it stopped working after that.
Yeah. I feel like that happens to a lot of parents because you'll see it everywhere when you're a new mom. I didn't actually. I had no comprehension of it until like, I think she was like 4 or 5 months. And I was like, oh no, I'm supposed to put her down drowsy but awake. I've been nursing to sleep this whole time. Mm-hmm. But we see it quite a bit with clients where they're able to do that in the beginning. And then when it stops working, they feel like they're doing something wrong. I feel like one of the reasons that it works so well in the beginning for some babies anyways, is because they have kind of that maternal melatonin that they get from mom. So they're just naturally kind of sleepier and dozier. Like I know with Luna, she would sleep all the time at that age. Like I could put her down drowsy but awake. She seems super, super easygoing. I might have been able to like continue with that, but I just didn't want to. I was happy to kind of nurse to sleep.
Exactly.
It was like, this is enjoyable for me. It's relaxing for her. There's so many benefits. Like we just kind of kept nursing to sleep. But I don't think from like the get-go with Aylin, my oldest, there's no way she would have ever gone down drowsy but awake, even in the newborn stage. I mean, I didn't really try, but I just feel like her temperament, she wouldn't do that.
Exactly. I didn't really think I had to do that, I guess, when she was a newborn. She just did it easily because she was, like you said, a newborn, like melatonin and all that. And then once I figured out like that's not really a thing, you don't have to do it, I was totally fine with like nursing her to sleep. But even like with the drowsy but awake, she still took like super short naps. Like she would only take 20 to like 35 minute naps, which I knew that was like, I learned that was normal. And then throughout the night, I didn't like, so funny because during the day I did it, but at nighttime I always nursed her before she went to sleep. Like she connected sleep cycles.
Yeah. Obviously, we know during the day, like short naps under 6 months, even 7 months, sometimes 8 months, depending on the child, are pretty normal. It takes a while to see a little bit of consolidation around that. And then we have, you know, situations where families, the naps aren't consolidating. They feel like they need to do crib hour along with this drowsy but awake thing, which is not necessary. You don't have to teach your child to connect sleep cycles. They don't need to go down drowsy but awake. They will eventually do it on their own, regardless of how you put them to sleep. So it's definitely not the key to connecting sleep cycles by any means. If your child has ever slept more than an hour, they have connected a sleep cycle before. So definitely not something that you need to teach them to do. I know the kind of the stigma around that is if you are supporting your child to sleep, they're going to wake up and they're going to expect to be supported back to sleep the same way, which I mean, from a sleep association standpoint, like, yeah, fair enough. That's their sleep association. They're going to need some help going back to sleep. But it's not the reason that they're not connecting sleep cycles. And we know that just from a foundations aspect and figuring out, you know, your child's unique sleep needs, whether they're overtired, undertired, that really, really helps. But just naturally linking those sleep cycles, it has nothing to do with how they fall asleep.
Exactly.
And you'll also hear like the comparisons about like your pillow. How would you feel if you had your favorite pillow and then you woke up and your favorite pillow was gone? And yeah, it's just, I mean, I would be worried if somebody came and stole my pillow, but
yeah.
Like the analogies that they use with drowsy but awake are just so silly. Like if I fell asleep on the couch and my husband like, carried me to my bed or something, if I woke up in my bed, I wouldn't panic and wonder where I was because I woke up in a safe place, right?
Like exactly. And that's what you want. You want your child to feel safe in their crib. You don't want them to, you know, feel uncomfortable or not safe. You want, if they do wake up, even though you supported them, they're going to be like, oh, I'm okay. And then they'll go back to sleep. That's the hope. I feel like that's what the thing is, like what draws you up but awake. They push it because you want them to fall asleep in their crib by themselves independently, which we know you don't have to do that. But I have to ask, what's crib hour? I've never heard of that.
You've never heard of crib hour? Oh, you're not going to like this one. This one's going to make you mad.
Oh, boy.
Essentially what it is, and I learned it in my initial sleep certification, but naps are supposed to be a specific length. Like when you look at all of the sleep training, strict age appropriate schedules that you see, you know, if your baby doesn't sleep for an hour or they only sleep for one sleep cycle, you're supposed to leave them in there for the full hour and hope that they go back to sleep. So essentially it's like cry it out, but for an hour. Like but if like the hour nap. Is not, yeah, like crib hour. It's like if the hour, it's not an hour yet, you put them down, they woke up after 45 minutes, you leave them in there.
Aww. What really if they sad. Have like a poopy diaper? Or what if they're like,
no, you know, there's so many reasons that they're, and it's just so crazy too, because as we just mentioned, like it is really normal for them to take short naps. Like it's not something you have to teach them how to do. We get questions about that all the time. It's like, no, just leave it be. Like as long as their wake windows are on point for their unique sleep needs, like it will eventually happen. They don't need to be taught how to connect those sleep cycles.
Exactly.
And you know, if they wake up happy and refreshed from a 45 minute nap, they're probably good. They got all the sleep they needed. It's not necessary to have them resettle. I mean, it would be lovely.
Of course.
Would take a nice long nap for us, but it's definitely not, it's not necessary. And we get a lot of talks about like, oh, like crap sleep. They only took a short little nap. It wasn't restorative. Like, no, it's not. There's no such thing as crap sleep. A big thing too is like the, when will a child connect sleep cycle? So we talked about it a little bit with sleep environment. A child has to feel 100% safe and secure in their sleep environment in order to be able to link those sleep cycles. And in the first year, it is very difficult to kind of make them feel 100% safe in their sleep environment because you are their safe place. They want to be close to you. And it is really normal for them to wake up, signal, just check to make sure you're still there, and then go back to sleep. So that one's really tricky. And that one just comes with time and consistency and, you know, having them in their sleep space, knowing that it's a safe place to be, spending time there during the day. And then another thing with connecting sleep cycles is they do have to be set up from a foundations aspect. They can't be overtired, undertired. And a lot of the time we're following age appropriate wake windows that may or may not work for our child. So nailing those down, figuring out what works for their unique sleep needs. So next thing is like, we will see babies who actually will go down drowsy but awake on very, very rare occasions, but they still wake up at night. We don't see it very often. We don't have a ton of clients, but we do have clients that come to us. We're like, yeah, my baby goes down drowsy but awake. They always have, but they've been happy to do that. It's kind of a temperament thing, but they still wake up at night. And most of the time it has to do with one of those other things. They're not set up for optimal sleep, stuff like that. And it's also just normal for babies to wake up at night. So we can talk now about just why it doesn't work, just from an attachment aspect, because I feel like a lot of parents think that they are doing something wrong when they try drowsy but awake, and it just does not work. So babies are not wired for separation. It actually stirs up their limbic system. So for sleep to happen, the human nervous system needs to be in sleep mode, which is kind of that rest, digest mode, parasympathetic nervous system, which is a place of calm. Like we are meant to actually relax and fall asleep. I know that's surprising because a lot of people will suggest leaving a baby to panic and cry alone and teach them to self-soothe, but we actually have to be calm and relaxed in order to fall asleep. So with drowsy but awake, we get baby kind of into that sleep mode through contact and support. And then we put them in their sleep space and their focus immediately shifts to that separation, which then shifts them into panic mode, which is fight or flight. And then they kind of go into that sympathetic nervous system and start, you know, freaking out and crying because they were nice and cozy. And then all of a sudden we put them in their crib. Drowsy. Now I know a lot of sleep consultants are starting to recommend fully awake, which is interesting. I think it would be a temperament-based thing. It seems like it would make more sense than drowsy but awake because you're kind of like having them go into the crib, hopefully when they're already tired, But you're kind of, you know, sitting beside them, adding that support. I mean, I guess with some sleep trainers would probably tell you to just put them fully down awake and then leave. But if I were to try fully awake, I would probably put them into their sleep space, and sit there beside them and support them that way. Like, you might have a better result with that. But I think a lot of this is just going to be based off temperament, and you don't need to be made to feel like you're the reason that your child can't do drowsy but awake. It's very rare to come across. From a temperament standpoint, you know, baby would have to be super easygoing, super chill baby, which, you know, we don't see that a ton. I think it's always good to point out to where this self-soothing idea kind of came from. So Dr. Thomas Anders was actually studying infant sleep, and he would note that there were some babies who would wake up at night and they would signal for their parents, super normal. And then there would be other babies that he kind of dubbed as non-signalers or self-soothers, where they would kind of rouse, look around, and then just kind of go back to sleep, or maybe not even fully rouse. They would just kind of connect that sleep cycle. It was fully based off of temperament. It was never something that he wanted parents to teach their children how to do. So that's kind of where that came from. We have so many parents that say, I have to teach my child to self-soothe. We see it all the time on intake forms, despite all the content that we put out there. Parents are always so worried when they can't teach their child how to self-soothe, which we've talked about before, does require emotional regulation, which babies are not capable of doing. It requires contact from a primary caregiver in order to fully down-regulate their heightened emotion from a state of stress. So not possible to teach your child how to self-soothe, but we can do a whole other episode on that.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, this drowsy but awake idea really focuses on, you know, pushing that independence and that obsession around independent sleep. We all want independent babies, right?
Yeah, I know. I think that's like what drowsy but awake is. I was just thinking about when you're talking, like, you have your baby, right? You get them a little drowsy, do whatever you have to do to put them down. And then you put them down and they freak out. Like, what were you doing? I was just like so comfortable with you.
I was half asleep, and
then,
right?
I was pretty much half asleep. And then you put me down and you woke me up practically. And then the parent thinks they're doing something wrong by if their baby does wake up in a panic. Like, oh, why didn't it work for my baby? You know, it's because our babies aren't, like you said, aren't meant to, you know, be independent from us, and it's okay to support them fully to sleep and then put them in their crib when they're in a full, or even if you don't want to put them in their crib, hold them, whatever you do for sleep. But it's like, I feel like with the whole pushing independence and the obsession around independent sleep is definitely pushed by like the sleep training industry and definitely our society, Western society.
I was
like,
just going to say that. Yeah.
Well, like that we have to have independence at such a young age. I mean, they expect a 4-month-old to self-soothe to sleep. I think that's like the most mind-boggling thing to me to hear. And every single new mom is being told that. Mm-hmm. Now you have to put your baby down to sleep independently. They have to learn this skill to fall asleep on their own, or they're never going to fall asleep on their own. That is a very like strong word to use to a new mom. I mean, I was told that. I don't know if you have or not. Like, if I don't stop supporting Nora, she's never going to fall asleep on her own. Like, that's wild. And then it puts, you know, these thoughts in a new mom's head, like, what am I doing wrong? I'm damaging my baby. But in reality, supporting them is not damaging them. And it's creating this great attachment, you know, and this great connection you have with your baby. So I feel like our society has everything very backwards.
Yeah, and it is very backwards. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, if you're even lucky, and I'm in Canada, you're in the States, if you're even lucky, you get 4 months. Like, that's like extended maternity for you guys, which is just nuts. And like, it is hard to function at and go about, you know, going to work and stuff when you have a child who is waking up at night normally, because it is biologically normal, and you're expected to function like that. And just the lack of support. I even just shared a post yesterday about it. You probably saw it, about kind of the millennial, you can say what you want about millennial dads, but like, they're a generation of like involved dads and parents who are actually able to support their kiddos to sleep. And whenever I see a post like that, it's just so true. There's so many expectations, like from, I guess you could call them boomers and stuff, that are like surprised and shocked that the dads are so involved, for the most part anyways. Obviously we see some other situations, but I know from like my standpoint, Lane is super, super involved with both of the girls. Like I am not uncomfortable leaving him to put them down to sleep by any means. And, you know, I think you can say the same for Dave as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's very, very hands-on involved. And a lot of parents don't have that type of support, unfortunately. And it's sad. Like,
for sure. Or if you're a single parent and having to do it on your own, like we always say this, like we understand why families are pushed to sleep training, or we understand why. But the thing is, with like we always talk about, just because you're doing that, you're not teaching your kid anything about sleep. I feel like you're just teaching them to stop signaling to you.
Yeah.
Just like with the whole temperament thing. So that's why it's like upsetting to hear these things from our clients or people on Instagram, like, oh, I have to teach them the skill. Like, well, it's not really, you don't have to teach them the skill because it doesn't work.
No, it's not. It's lies, essentially. Yeah. Like they're being sold this lie that their child has to self-soothe. You have to put them down drowsy but awake, or they'll never be able to fall asleep on their own. And I talked about this a little bit the other day, but I like Aylin had come to us and said, I want to have a big girl sleep, because she saw it on Bluey, which it was so cute. But I immediately was like, okay, sure you do, because we've supported her to sleep. You know, she's five and we lay with her every night and she falls asleep and we like it. And I will continue to do it until she literally tells me to go away. And I was a little worried that she was going to tell us to go away the other day. And it didn't work out. My husband, she said she wanted him to fully leave the room. And he was like, I don't think that's a good idea. It's not going to work. But, you know, if you want to try it, sure. But I was like, you could try just maybe not like laying beside her, maybe just sit on the edge of the bed. And she had it in her mind, I think because it was the Bluey episode that she saw, that he was supposed to sit at the end of the bed or in a chair, which is funny, and read a book while she fell asleep. Not a book to her.
It was like read a book to yourself.
Oh. Read a book to yourself and just stay in the room, which is like cute, because I'm like, okay, like he's staying present. That's fine. But at the same time, like I know she craves that contact. She's highly sensitive. She's gonna want to be snuggled to sleep. So he tried that and he sat on the edge of the bed and she's like, you need to read a book. And he was like, I don't have a book. Can I like look at my phone? She's like, yeah, okay. And then like it just slowly progressed into like, well, maybe we can try this again when I'm six. Can you like come here and just like lay closer to me? So he did that, and then like it ended up her being like literally on top of his chest.
Oh, that's adorable.
And he's like, it was the cutest, like just watching that unravel with her, because he's like, I know she doesn't want to, but she saw it on a show and she wants to try it, so we're gonna like humor her. But like both of us are kind of like, we love it. Like I have no interest in not wanting to do that. I mean, obviously there are nights when I'm like, okay, kid, like she's having a hard time going to sleep and it's really annoying and I wish I could get out of there faster. But for the majority of the time, it's like 10 minutes. And I, you know, I'll have calls with like potential clients who are like, yeah, like, you know, they're 4-month-old. They're like, I'm just really worried. Like they're never going to be able to fall asleep independently. And I just like stop them. I'm like, we lay with our 5-year-old and they've never fallen asleep. And like, just the relief on their faces. They're like, oh, okay. And I'm like, it's fine. Right. Like,
exactly.
Do any of that. It's great.
Exactly. I feel like that's the thing too with new moms, is we feel so alone, you know, like that we're the only ones going through, like, this is my baby is the only baby that doesn't know how to do drowsy but awake, or my baby is the only baby that needs, like, that's obviously not true. And when you dive more into like, you know, social media, or you're open about like your struggles, it's like a lot of new moms are ashamed of what they're going through. I mean, there's like this crazy percentage of how many women lie to their pediatricians about bed sharing because they're afraid of, you know, being shamed. But it's like a lot of moms, whoever's listening, I promise you, a lot of moms are supporting their babies to sleep, and their babies
and
are
toddlers
and toddlers and children. I mean, exactly. Nora's same, 3.5, and I'm still laying next to her to fall asleep, and I love it, and I will until she's, if she wants me to lay with her till she's 10, I will.
I like, literally don't care. Like that
I don't care either. She sleeps all night long, most nights. Of course, there's nights that maybe a nightmare, whatever, but she sleeps through the nights most nights because of what, same with your girls, we created a healthy, safe environment for her so she feels safe in her space, and she knows I'm going to come to her if she needs me. Yes. So like, and the first year was rough with sleep, but I also didn't know a lot. So it's like, you learn and you adapt, and you can definitely still achieve good night's sleep without doing this independent sleep. Like it's not, you don't need to do it. Like just another family member just said, you still lay with her? And I just look at them like, yep. And I like confidently said it. So I'm like, I wanted to be like, I didn't want to get into it, but be like, why are you asking like in a bad way? Like, it's not a bad thing. Like, Like, if I was still nursing her, I'd still be nursing her, but I decided to stop. You know, it's like, what are you going to do? Like, look at me and be like, that's weird or that's wrong. Like, why? Why is, do you lay with your husband till you fall asleep together? Yeah, I bet you do.
Yep, exactly.
It's just the same crazy. Thing with your child.
It is. And a child, like, not an adult either. It's crazy.
Exactly. There's so many adults that want to be cuddled to sleep, or they need like their sleepy time tea, or they need like a special blanket.
All the associations.
Like, they need associations, but they think it differently for like a baby because they want to push this independence. Yeah. I think it's because of the disconnect, like you said about going back to work, the disconnect from the mother usually with the baby. We want babies to be independent so moms can work faster and they don't need their moms anymore. Which is just so untrue because they're still going to need their moms when they come home. You know, when mom comes home from work, they're still going to need them. And they're probably going to struggle even more because they're away from their mom or that separation throughout the night and whatever. So it's very backwards.
At nighttime, it is very, very backwards. It sucks because like, there's not a ton that we can do about it besides you just educate families on what's normal and hope that, you know, they do what works best for their family. It's funny that you like mentioned like the sleep associations and stuff with parent, like with adults and everything. I was just thinking, I'm like the drowsy but awake situation, like getting them all cozy and comfy. Like you could use a different pillow analogy with that essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, could you imagine if you're like laying down on your pillow, like ready to go to sleep and somebody just rips your pillow out from under your head?
You're like, not gonna essentially fall asleep.
Like, here you go, you're drowsy but awake.
And you're gonna be awake all over again, right? You'll probably have to take even longer to fall asleep, or that sleep pressure is like
move
gone.
From the parasympathetic nervous system to the sympathetic. You're like panic immediately. Someone just ripped your pillow out from under your head. That's essentially what we're doing. We're trying to throw them in the crib, drowsy but awake.
Exactly. And the baby probably feels stressed, or the mom feels stressed because of the baby waking up, and they might even be awake, who knows, for the next nap because they probably relieved enough sleep pressure, and then the mom's all stressed, and it just like makes this horrible like toxic like cycle. I feel like I think it's just like the terrible pressure we put on new moms in our society is really, really sad.
Absolutely. It's just crazy. And like, we, as you know, at most moms are sitting there and typing things into Google, and you know, we get on calls with them and it's like, well, everything I read and everything I see on social media, it says that I'm doing this wrong. And I just like, so many moms just want that reassurance around their child's sleep. And those are honestly my favorite cases because you can instantly make them feel better. Be like, actually, that's all really, really normal, which is like the best part of our job. It's my favorite thing. Like, I love helping families get babies to sleep, you know, better, get more consolidated sleep, figure out what works best for their family. But those are like the most rewarding cases where you see that mindset shift and they start, you know, not giving a crap about all of the things that people are saying around them. And it's hard when you don't have a community around you who, you know, every single person around you has sleep trained. It makes you feel really, really alone. But
for sure,
I hope that, you know, this podcast and the content and stuff that we put out there makes you feel less alone. If your baby is not cool with going down drowsy but awake. But we typed a whole bunch of stuff into Google because we always like to do that whenever we were looking at a different topic. So we typed drowsy but awake into Google. And there were a few things that came up. Obviously, the majority of websites, until you dive really, really deep, will tell you that that is the key to getting your child to sleep through the night. Some of the funny things that came up were, one of them was giving your baby the gift to be able to get themselves drowsy and then off to sleep unaided by you is amazing. You're really giving your baby the gift of good sleep for the rest of their lives. And I mean, the rest of your lives, that's saying a lot, because we've talked about this before. It's sleep training is not like a one-off thing.
No,
it's rarely a one-off thing. So again, that's kind of sold to parents, like, I have to do this because it's the gift of sleep. Like, they're going to be able to put themselves to sleep for the rest of their lives. And that's really not the case, because you will be infant sleep, toddler sleep, it's not linear. It goes up and down. You're going to be met with bouts of teething. You're going to be met with developmental progression, separation anxiety, growth spurts. All of these crazy things are going to happen, transitions in life, and things are going to go a little bit backwards. And then you're going to have to retrain. It's a whole thing.
Exactly.
So, definitely not the gift of sleep.
No.
The gift of sleep is really teaching them that sleep is a safe place to go and stay.
Exactly. And I feel like just educating, like you said, like, it's okay to bed share, or it's okay to contact nap, or it's okay to support your child to sleep. Because if I knew all that in the beginning, I would have gotten so much more sleep.
Yeah.
Like, if I would have just brought Nora in the bed safely, mm-hmm. like, I would have slept all night with her nursing preoperatively, like, yeah. whatever, throughout the night. Like, totally. I lost so much sleep in the beginning because I was too afraid of doing those bad habits that everyone was telling me to do.
Totally. So. I mean, like, the second time around, oh my gosh, I slept so much better. And I don't think she was waking up any less than my first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she still woke up every 2 hours overnight to nurse back the sleep. But because we had a sidecar crib and I could just quickly pull her into bed with me, like, I didn't wake up. Even now, like, with her 1 to 0 wake ups a night, I don't look at the clock really. Like, I have my phone and it kind of like, and my Fitbit that will like tell me like what time it was when I got up. Mm-hmm. But I don't look at the clock at that time. She comes into bed with me at some point in time, usually early morning, and I quickly nurse back to sleep. And then I think with like my oldest, I'd be sitting in a rocking chair for like an hour in the middle of the night and then trying to transfer her. And if she didn't transfer, you restart the whole process.
Yep. Again. Same
like,
thing.
I'm so the tired.
Same. Yep. The same. I literally did the same exact thing because I thought it was so wrong or bad to bring her in bed. Or like, mm-hmm. I thought she had to go in her crib. You know, like you think these thoughts and like, yeah. if we just like, you know, totally just silence the noise of that and just tune into like ourselves and our instincts, yeah. then you would just be so much more restful and just feel better like in your motherhood journey and just parenting. So yeah hopefully we reach these moms before or if they're even pregnant or like, you know, before they have a baby, because like I was not informed about any of this stuff when I was pregnant.
Like, no, you're worried about like giving birth and like what to do with
exactly.
the baby comes, but not really sleep. Like I know some people do a lot of research and we have moms who say like, oh, I had every intention of sleep training, that was my plan, and then the baby comes and they're like, I can't sleep train you, I can't leave you to cry, like what do I do now?
Yeah.
And you've already read all this horrible information and now you're stressed out about it. And you're feeling like, it just feels so wrong to let my baby cry. Well, yeah, you're biologically wired to not do that.
Exactly.
So we do, you know, encourage you to follow your instincts on that. And of course, bed sharing is not for every family and stuff, but there are other options to get better sleep, even if bed sharing doesn't work for your family. Like one of the big things with like newborn sleep and stuff is we loved the sidecar crib because I could have her on a separate surface that was firm and all of that important stuff, and then also still have my space but be able to respond a lot easier
than like leaving your room and going to the other room.
Totally. Or even if, you know, it doesn't work for your family to bed share, like, okay, maybe you set up a sleep space in their room for yourself for that time being. Like nothing is permanent. You can do what works for your family at that time. And then, you know, you're able to respond a little bit faster and stuff, and you're not trying to keep yourself awake in a rocking chair in a dangerous situation. Like it's just not a good idea. So yeah. And then the next one that we found, it says after 4 months of age is when babies are more capable of falling asleep in what we call calm and awake, as they're ready to put in the extra effort to put themselves to sleep on their own, !
Well, pretty much just like sleep training. I mean, I don't think they're calm. No, personally, no, I don't think, no. I mean, I don't think your baby's calm when you just put them down and walk away. I feel like they go in the extreme, like, you know, panic stressed mode. Out. Yeah, panic for sure.
Like it's just their brain's not wired to do that. So like unless you have a super chill, easygoing baby, it's so rare to see that at all. I think the 4 months mark that they're talking about there is usually when sleep falls apart, let's be honest.
Exactly.
Or, you know, 4 month sleep regression or developmental progression, as we like to call it. But before that too, you'll constantly see things like, oh, you can't spoil a newborn. Like it's totally fine to nurse them to sleep, rock them to sleep. But it's like something like probably society. Something switches at that 4 month mark where it's like, well, now they have to be independent. Like they're 4 months old.
I know. Why is it the 4 months? Is there like something in like the sleep training industry or something that was published or said like at 4 months, like you have to do it at that time?
In my initial certification, it was like babies can self-soothe at this point in time. And it was just and during that, you know, during that entire certification, I was like, okay, is somebody going to tell me how they self-soothe? Because I need like the science behind that. And there was no science behind it because they're not actually capable of doing that. It wasn't until we kind of I got a different certification and dove into like the neuroscience aspect. And it's like, oh, wow, actually from a brain science standpoint, they're not able to do that. And like nobody's in the sleep training world is talking about that. that, you know, we call it self-soothing. And like some of them will kind of talk about like, well, they're capable of falling asleep independently. And I get that. Like some people do want their kiddos to fall asleep more independently. Fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, it does not need to be done by leaving them to self-soothe or cry themselves to sleep alone. Like you could, if you really wanted that, take on a different approach, I guess more of a gentle sleep training approach, and kind of just, you know, gradually remove associations on your own while still being present, supporting your child through that, depending on their temperament. Because some kiddos are highly sensitive kiddos, they're not going to go for that regardless.
Exactly,
so you probably
yeah.
are going to be more stuck supporting them to sleep, which is completely normal. You know, if you do have a more of an easygoing baby, maybe try something like that. It never has to be a situation where it's like, hey, I'm going to let you cry it out, or I'm going to use fervor where I awkwardly, you know, go in and out of the room and check on you in little, you know, timed check-ins. And I set a timer, mm-hmm. like sit there and stress myself out.
And stress baby out.
Yeah, and stress baby out. And then another one that came up is sleep is a learned skill. Yeah. No, this one always gets to me.
It's yeah.
Biological function. It's human biology. We are all born knowing how to sleep. It's not something you have to teach your baby how to do. They were sleeping in utero. Like it's not
exactly.
No, completely unnecessary. We can assure you that both all of our girls, they know how to sleep. They sleep just fine.
Yeah. And even like when they were waking throughout the night, they were sleeping just fine then. You know, it's like, I feel like another thing the society does is like deem babies who wake at night as like bad sleepers. Like that's normal for babies to wake at night because they're seeking something when they're waking at night.
There's a reason. Like the key is really just getting to the root of why the wake-ups are happening. If you can determine that the wake-ups are happening due to, you know, progressions, teethings, things like that, or, you know, is there something off with those foundations? Are they overtired, undertired, unbalanced daytime sleep or nighttime sleep? Mm-hmm. Or is there a need, maybe an emotional need, separation anxiety, things like that? We could all sleep a little bit easier when we're able to differentiate, you know, to an extent, what's actually going on and why they're waking up, instead of being made to feel like you're doing something wrong by supporting your child to sleep. It's such a cop out.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Yeah. We get kiddos on these age appropriate schedules that may or may not work for their unique sleep needs. And when they don't work for their unique sleep needs, it's automatically the parents' fault because they've been responsive.
Yeah. Which is just obviously not true.
That's not true. It's a little crap. So yeah.
Yeah.
And we always tell families, you could literally do nothing and your child would eventually sleep through the night, barring any medical concerns. So definitely, if drowsy but awake does not work for your baby, there is no reason for you to have to continue to try that at all. Your child will eventually sleep through the night and connect those sleep cycles all on their own. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to connect with us beyond the podcast. You can find myself on all social media platforms at Alicia Dyshon. And for more parenting and sleepy goodness, hop over to Instagram and follow Eleni at Eleni Cats. Until next week, keep embracing the chaos and remember, you're doing an amazing job, even if it doesn't feel like it.